Hello, welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I would like to begin today's program with an article which appeared in a recent issue of the Wall Street Journal. The title of this article is Humanoid Robots Finally Get Real Jobs. It was in a section of the Wall Street Journal entitled The Future of Everything, Artificial Intelligence. Newly powered by artificial intelligence brains, these creatures of science fiction are moving toward a practical reality, stacking, sorting, and lifting. This article was written for the journal by Christopher Mims. In a large, brightly lit warehouse in Flowery Branch, Georgia, a pair of human-shaped robots made by Agility Robotics tiptoe across polished concrete floors, their gait oddly mincing. Their legs end in narrow, hoof-like feet sheathed in custom non-slip shoes. They stoop to retrieve bins full of Spanx shapewear and then carry them to a nearby conveyor belt. While their jobs may be straightforward and menial, these digit robots are a direct replacement for the humans who would otherwise have been doing this work. They are also a flexible bridge between the other less versatile automated machines common in warehouses and factories these days. In this way, a humanoid robot like Digit represents the next step in an evolution that stretches back to the invention of the assembly line itself, in the speed up and automation of processes essential to e-commerce, manufacturing, agriculture, and every other part of our physical and built environment. Science fiction has long been full of robots that look, move, and even think like we do. In the real world, humanoid forms have, until very recently, been a non-starter. Hard to build, expensive, slow, and lumbering, they have never quite made sense compared with the countless other varieties of purpose-built and vastly more affordable robots that have multiplied rapidly in the past decade or so. And that is changing. As global demand now for new kinds of robots has shot up, mass manufacturing and falling costs for components are making them cheaper to produce. Just as important, new kinds of AI, some close kin to the kind that has upended the priorities of tech companies and governments since the debut of ChatGPT, are animating robot bodies in ways that simply were not possible even a few years ago. While purpose-built robots continue to proliferate, be they wheeled conveyances or dog-shaped machines carrying guns, the advantages of a body plan such as ours are beginning to carve out a niche for humanoid robots. The world, after all, is built for things that look and move like we do. It's full of stairs, it's full of gangways and shelves at shoulder height, and sight lines at eye level. So hewing to the humanoid form makes it easier now to slot robots into existing roles. Then there are the more subtle advantages of the human form. We can pick up heavy loads by cantilevering them over bent legs. And by contrast, a robot with wheels and arms would have to have a much wider and heavier base to keep from tipping over. More than a dozen startups worldwide are now offering humanoid robots. All have grand projections of a science fiction future of limitless human assistance from our mechanical serfs. Several already have their bots undergoing testing in real-world factories and warehouses out there. A key advantage that makers tout, unlike most current automation, humanoid robots can do more than one thing. Humanoid robots are the first category of robots that can be doing completely different tasks based on the needs of the business or the time of the shift, says Adrian Storch, who is Chief Automation Officer of GXO Logistics, which owns and operates the distribution center for Spanx, where Agility's Digit robots now roam. In the future, we could have Digit unloading a trailer in the morning, picking goods up in the afternoon, and loading trucks in the evening. For makers of next-generation humanoid robots, the reasoning goes, their potential flexibility helps to justify their cost by making them usable for more hours out of every year. None of the companies that offer humanoid robots currently discloses their cost. All will say that over time the cost will fall and that this will be key to their adoption. The challenge for robotics has always been the economics, says Jeff Cardenas, who is chief executive of Austin-based Aptronics, which is starting trials with its own humanoid robots at a different GXO warehouse. That is why his company, since its spin-out from a University of Texas robotics lab nearly a decade ago, has been working on making robots as affordable as possible. But even the most inexpensive and reliable robot body is nothing without a brain. And this is where some of the world's most valuable companies and some of the best-known startups come into the picture, including chipmaker NVIDIA and ChatGPT developer OpenAI. Many of their biggest bets on multi-billion dollar data centers and on multi-million dollar salaries for star engineers are at least in part about robotics. We believe the enabling technology for autonomous robots is the same technology that is behind all the things we're doing with artificial intelligence and with large language models, says Rev Labaridian, who is head of NVIDIA's efforts to enable simulation of real-world environments, a key to building robot brains. Some people believe just as chatbots are soon to attain a level of ability that could allow them to perform tasks with little or no human supervision, robots will be next. The ChatGPT moment for general robotics is just around the corner now, NVIDIA Chief Executive Jensen Huang recently said in a speech at an electronics trade show. Already the latest wave of artificial intelligence tech, both hardware and software, is enabling robots, and in particular humanoid robots, to behave in ways that were beyond the state of the art even a few years ago. We have evolved such that the robot brains are much more powerful today that I'm extremely confident about, says Ayana Howard, who is a roboticist who has been working on humanoid robots for decades now and is dean of the College of Engineering at Ohio State University. Boston Dynamics, a company famous for filling the internet with videos of increasingly capable robots for more than 20 years now, embodies this trend. When Boston Dynamics was spun out from MIT back in 1992, control systems for robots, in other words, their brains, were primeval by today's standards. Since that time, artificial intelligence, which essentially is about teaching computers rather than programming them, has been steadily introduced into more and more parts of the software that directs the Boston Dynamics robots, says Aaron Saunders, who is Chief Technology Officer of that company. Robotics is a field in which seeing is believing. The success or the failure of its creations is easy for anyone to evaluate. In that spirit, Melanie Wise, Chief Technology Officer of Agility, is quick to point out that her company was the first in the United States to have humanoid robots doing real work in an actual production environment. Yet, whatever the pace of the takeover of manual labor by humanoid robots, their capabilities are for now quite limited, as are their number. Inside that Spanx warehouse, there are still just 2-digit robots on staff, says Stotch of GXO. For robots to really rise in this industry, in which thousands of subtasks are still need to be automated, many different kinds of humanoid robots may be required, he adds. Howard of Ohio State University, who has more experience working with humanoid robots than almost anybody out there, agrees that the future is likely to be an ever-growing bestiary of robot body types, no matter how smart they become. And Cardenas of Approntronics believes that the most versatile robots will be torsos with arms and heads that can be placed on top of almost any platform, from wheels to 4 legs. The future of general purpose robots, in other words, might be humanoid only in the sense that we'll expect them to think like us, whatever their body plan might be. The next article that I would like to read for you today is kind of a follow-up of the previous one. This article appeared in the Wall Street Journal the 17th of April, a little bit more recently than the previous article. The title of this article is AI Might Not Take Our Jobs, But Only If We Act Quickly. It is in humans' power to put artificial intelligence on a path to help us rather than to replace us, economist says. This article was written for the journal by Justin Lehart. Will AI augment our work and help us, or automate our work and take our jobs? One economist contends that it is up to us, and we're doing it wrong. Massachusetts Institute of Technology economist Sandhil Mullanathan is 52 years of age and makes the point that artificial intelligence is not a thing that is happening to humans, but a thing that humans are making. We have a choice about what kind of technology it becomes. Mullanathan, recipient of a MacArthur Genius Grant in 2002, spent much of the first stage of his career working on ways in which the insights from behavioral economics could benefit the poor, culminating in a 2013 book with behavioral psychologist Eldar Shafir, Scarcity: Why Having Too Little Means So Much. He then turned his focus to artificial intelligence. A touch point for Mullanathan is an idea that Apple co-founder Steve Jobs came up with after seeing a 1973 Scientific American graphic. It showed then that pound for pound, man on bicycle was a vastly more efficient traveler than other animals. The computer could be a bicycle for the mind, Jobs said, amplifying our inherent abilities. Mullanathan thinks the idea that computers are tools meant to help us rather than to replace us needs to be restored and applied to AI. People imagine that artificial intelligence is going to automate things, but they don't appreciate that automation is just one path. There is nothing intrinsic about machine learning or artificial intelligence that puts us on that path. The other path is really the path of augmentation. For me, bicycles for the mind describe that. Whether we end up building things that replace us or things that enhance our capabilities, that is something that we can influence. But I am feeling as much urgency as everybody else. If we keep going down the automation path, it's going to be very hard to walk back and start changing things. Every time Anthropic or OpenAI or Google releases a new model, you'll notice that they always talk about, oh, we did better on these benchmarks. That's the way they keep score. In many ways, those benchmarks dictate what these models are asked to be good at. We pick up an area and then we say, can this thing do this as well as people can? So we're building algorithms with a strong capability for automation. And when we say they're getting better and better, we mean their capabilities for automation are getting better and better. If you look at the standard benchmarks, there is nothing in them that would make you say, oh, here's a metric for helping a person do something better. So, are there settings in which artificial intelligence is playing this augmentation role, rather either accidentally or on purpose? One of my favorite examples is a paper by a former student of mine, Lindsay Raymond, with Eric Bryn Jolson and Danielle Lee. They go to these call centers. They're more like chat centers. People are typing, but I'm going to keep calling them call centers. Queries come into them, technical queries such as someone's stuck on something, and workers answer them. An artificial intelligence bot is introduced that gives suggestions to the workers. The researchers then study the effect of the bot on performance, and they find that when the workers get access to the bot, they do better, and they find that the worst workers get helped the most. Then they study what happens to those workers' performance when the bot goes offline for a day or so. What they find then is that early on without the bot, workers just revert. But after a few months, remove the bot and the worker is just as good as with the bot. So what was happening is this bot is actually not a helper bot, but a teacher bot. And then the question comes up, how does AI as a bicycle for the mind fit in here? Imagine that you're looking for a job and you wanted some help from an algorithm that would help you decide where you should apply. The where should I apply question is inherently a bicycle for the mind type of question. It requires combining some things that the person already knows. What kind of jobs do they like? Where they're willing to live, etc. With some stuff that the algorithm is better suited for. Given your resume, where are you likely to get an interview? And where are you likely to get an offer? So you've got these two different kinds of information. The algorithm understands, given your resume, what your opportunities might look like. You understand your preferences. If some communication could happen, a lot could get unlocked. A lot of this seems to come down to artificial intelligence is much better than we are at working with the data, but it doesn't quite see anything outside of the data. And the response to this is, and there are just so many problems where what's not in the data is as important as what is in the data. Then comes the question, what insights from behavioral economics could be used to design better artificial intelligence for the workers? One of the most useful things that augmentation can do is that it can help us with the things that we're not as good at to leave room for the things that we are excellent at. Behavioral economics has helped to identify those blind spots. Take something like a resume screening. We're pretty bad at reading through things really fast. It would be really interesting if after I did the resume screen, there was a product that would say, hey, there's 10 resumes that are the kind you usually don't pick. But when you do pick them, it looks like you actually hire the person or they do well in the interview. So why don't you give these more time? The question then comes up. Your work shows that scarcity, scarce time, scarce money, basically steals mental capacity. So how could artificial intelligence help us to deal with scarcity issues at work? A product I think would fundamentally transform the nature of work is one that would help me really just make better decisions about what I take on and what I don't take on. It seems a bit mundane here. You already have Google Calendar. You have automatic schedulers. But while those things all solve the logistics of scheduling, they are not solving the core time management problem, which we all have, which is not about, can this meeting fit in here? The core problem is that we're not managing bandwidth very well. We're not thinking about, oh man, if I take all of these meetings, I'm going to be overwhelmed. Notice this title, this has two elements we have mentioned. The algorithm has access to a wealth of understanding about your calendar, your past meetings, about known psychological biases. You have a wealth of understanding of what you're trying to accomplish. What has worked for you in the past? What does not work for you? What has made you nervous? If we could combine these two things, I think we'd have a totally different way to approach time management. Next, I'd like to read for you an article taken from the Arizona Republic, a recent issue, on retirement. It is on retirement, an exclusive. Too Young to Retire. This was written originally for USA Today by Daniel DeVise. They had to exit workforce before they were ready. Too young to retire. If you're one of the many Americans who think you'll work until 75 or 70 or even 65, think again. The average American retires at age 62, according to two annual surveys of working and retired Americans published by the Employee Benefit Research Institute and the Transamerica Center for Retirement Studies. The average over 50 worker expects to retire at age 67, according to Transamerica. The average life expectancy, though, is 77 and a half. Yet, in reality, retirement often comes suddenly and very unexpectedly by way of a corporate layoff or a household health scare. Here are the stories of Americans who retired years earlier than they had planned, for reasons largely beyond their control. For some of them, early retirement seeded financial ruin. The others exited work into a retirement that, while comfortable enough, fell far short of the life they had envisioned for themselves. 1,746 applications, but no job. Randy Seacat expected to retire at age 75, but the labor market had other plans for him. Seacat lost his customer support job at Amazon Web Services in late 2020 at age 58. He has not found work since, even after applying for more than 1,700 jobs and sitting through 51 interviews. Seacat's skills include internet marketing, video game design, search engine optimization, voice acting, and songwriting. For most of the past decade, Seacat worked at an Amazon subsidiary as a technical customer support associate, helping out with cloud computing. He lost his job when the company shipped it overseas, taking a severance package along with some aging colleagues. And I thought, okay, I'll be able to get back to work. No big deal, he said. Well, that didn't happen. Seacat lived in Seattle suburbs. His job search ranged north to Alaska, south to Portland, and east to Montana. Soon he saw a pattern. Applications hit a wall when the employer figured out his approximate age. Often they'd tell him he was overqualified. When an application reached the interview stage, he said, "Everything goes great until they discover that I'm a boomer." Even after 1,746 failed applications, Seacat says he isn't giving up. "I'm still too young to retire," he said. "I can't get Social Security, a benefit that kicks in at 62, and I burned through most of my savings trying to save my home." Seacat lived on retirement savings until the autumn of 2022, when they ran out and he was forced to leave his rented home. So he purchased an RV. He could live in it, but can't afford to rent a space in an RV park because those slots run $800 to $1,200 a month. I'm pretty much homeless here, he said, staying with family between Seattle and Portland. His belongings sit in a storage space that, like the RV space, he can no longer afford. And if he doesn't pay the bill soon, he said, it's going to be gone. And next, career unravels in a fateful fall. Larry Zarzetki planned to work until he dropped. He would put in 35 years at his Maryland Police Department and then segue into a job in security, following a time-honored tradition in law enforcement. At 49, Zarzecki's retirement plan unraveled along with his life. He developed a tremor in his hand. He started struggling with balance. At length, a doctor diagnosed Parkinson's disease. Zarzecki balked at telling loved ones and colleagues, but soon enough the disease announced itself. An ill-timed freezing episode in 2013 sent him toppling down the stairs of his family home. He suffered a brain injury at that time and severe spinal damage. Doctors wondered if he'd ever walk again, let alone work. He spent 21 months in the hospital learning to walk and talk all over again and relearning the story of his own life. The brain injury had wiped out his memory. Zarzecki wanted to work again, but no one wanted him. I couldn't even get a job as a greeter in Walmart, he said. Everything is fine until you get to the point where you have to start disclosing medical issues that may put you on somebody else or somebody else in danger or in harm's way. Look, I'm a liability. I get it. On the day of his catastrophic fall, Zarzecki had a police pension and $100,000 in retirement savings. He planned to max out the pension and build the retirement account to $500,000 with many more years of work. But after the fall, his wife divorced him. Hospital bills and medication copays chewed through his retirement account. Now 61, Zarzecki lives on his disability pension, occupying a modest in-law cottage next to his son's home in Stevensville on Maryland's eastern shore. Recently, he paid off the last of his hospital bills, leaving him debt-free, but he still faces $3,000 a month in out-of-pocket costs for medication. He has no savings. His income is more or less fixed. Simply put, he's broke. Whoops, I should have read ahead. That wasn't a very good note to end this program on. But this does bring us to the end of the time that we have for our program on careers for today. I hope that you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for listening in. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.